This is the Nature of Cities podcast. This is the Nature of Cities, a podcast about cities as ecosystems, ecosystems of people, nature, and buildings, open space, public space, green space, that makes cities livable, resilient, and sustainable. Episode 3, Where Can Civic Ecology Lead? Today's episode is a conversation among Lance Gunderson, a landscape ecologist from Emory University and one of the early thinkers on ideas of resilience ecology. Carolyn Lewis of Climate Leadership Opportunities, a leader in creating an informed and engaged public on climate change issues. And Aryan Walls, a professor of social learning and sustainable development at Wageningen University. The conversation took place at a workshop in Annapolis, Maryland, at the offices of the National Socio-Environmental Synthesis Center, or CESENC. The workshop was a gathering of scholars and practitioners come to talk about civic ecology, social mission-driven organizations that use greening and nature as a key lens. Think community gardens or river restoration groups or church groups devoted to sustainability. Lance, Carolyn, and Aryan met in the green room to talk about civic ecology's diverse approaches and the ways in which civic ecology organizations are critical to the social ecological landscape of communities. Here's their conversation.
We had a conversation earlier talking about that Chinese symbol G that many tell us represent both crisis and opportunity.
Caroline Lewis, Cleo.
And I think civic ecology almost hinges on the fact that when crises occur, these opportunities arise for civic engagement around a multitude of ecological issues. What's your thinking on this?
Very much the same, and that is that...
Lance Gunderson of Emory University.
I see the way in which people will are beginning to adapt to a more uncertain world in which there seems to be, you know, dramatic increase in the cost of environmental events. My travel plans for tonight were canceled because of a snowstorm. But that the societal costs of those are becoming more and more apparent. People becoming more and more aware of those kinds of changes in their environment. Another way of saying it is that we've become more vulnerable to these kinds of events that have gone on for millennia. And so rather than think about those as a threat, that is something to be avoided or something to be buffered against, you know, do we build levees higher? Do we guard ourselves against these? I think a much more productive and adaptive strategy is to take advantage of them. That is, use these as opportunities, not just for learning, but for trying new ideas that emerge. And so that's what I see in another sort of very interesting part of civic ecology is these folks are creative experimenters. They're out there trying different things, blending together different issues in new and novel ways.
Yeah. I wish we would get more funding for that trial and error, because the emergent solutions, when you have trial and error, tend to be or can be extremely rewarding.
I think it's a lot is about creating spaces for learning.
Aryan Walls, Wageningen University.
I think there's, we talked about it, Lance, earlier, the tyranny of measurement and of models in which we are kind of, we are very much bound by those
held
models.
Hostage almost,
held
right?
Held hostage, if you will. And I think, you know, we talk about a lot about adapting towards the changes that, that we are causing ourselves, and that's really important, and I think it generates new movements, it generates new creativity, new coalitions. But at the same time, what I'm a little bit worried about is that if you have civic ecology in an uncivic economy, if we lack the disruptive capacity to kind of upset these systems, these models that have led to unsustainability in the first place, then we may end up working kind of a shallow almost sustainability rather than a deep sustainability. If we're not addressing the root causes for why we have to deal with, you know, these erratic weather patterns or droughts or loss of food security, or if we're not going to question some of these systems, and if we don't face, we do live in a consumerist society, and right now our system is very much geared, our education too, it's become an extension of the global economy. And we are becoming maybe diligent workers, flexible, a lifelong learning, not to develop ourselves, but to help develop the economy. If that's what's driving it, I'm a little bit worried that we are working in the margins and we need to move to the mainstream by having this new way of thinking become more common practice than...
Well, your term root cause, and the root cause of a lot of what we're doing is consumerism, and a lot of the scale of consumerism is population. So the hot topics are how do we address consumerism, and how do we address population control and population stability? The one root cause that we can get to right away is carbon pollution. And for me, that's something that's on the table, or should be on the table right away. And if we took on carbon pollution, so that at least the worst effects on all these ecological projects that we're doing are tempered, then maybe we can start working on or simultaneously bring in the consumerism and the population control that we need.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges here is that I agree with everything that both of you have said in terms of we're now, we've changed. We've sort of been able to exploit readily available cheap energy sources for a century and a half now to build an amazingly complex structure of people and nature, and so one of the trains of thought that sort of underlies the civic ecology is this increasing separation between what this complex relationship between people and their environment, which goes back millennia, whether it's an evolutionary relationship in terms of providing food and shelter and basic provisions for the survival of the species, to something much more spiritual and aesthetic in terms of these manifold things. But that in this development, not only have we moved further away from that thing that we may conceptualize as nature, but we've also become more vulnerable to it. And so in some ways, what we're facing now, and we can't control it, it's beyond the limits of people to control these kinds of changes. So I think what we have to do is to learn how to adapt to a changing environment. I mean, I remember reading a dozen years ago, humans evolved in a period of climate change. That is, that's what forced our ancestors to develop big brains to deal with a capacity
complex
of a much more dynamic environment and changing environment. And I think we're faced with a similar kind of crisis today in terms of our world has become too complex to deal with in many ways. So I think what's happening is that people are trying to do what we can do at different levels, and to me, the way in which we need to address that uncertain future, much like Aryan would say, we need to learn our way into it rather than planning our way into it.
But are we going to learn our way into it while we're continuing to degrade it?
I think so. I mean, I don't see any other escape from it. I mean, that's really where...
That's the reality, huh?
Yeah.
That saddens me.
I think learning, we need to reconceptualize learning in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, we do live in an era with increasing complexity, accelerating change, a lot of uncertainty where old models don't really seem to work anymore. I think the social ecological crisis, if you will, is really also a crisis of values, and you already, Lance, alluded to the spiritual side, and the maximization of meaning should become more important than the maximization of profit, which
I think is right now.
Right now, that's not the kind of language our funders tend to respond to. But I do see that there are transition movements around the world. I do think that there is more economies of sharing. There's more community building. There, and you mentioned some grassroots projects also in Florida earlier today, where people are finding themselves around a crisis, and it's sad, but we learn the most when faced with a crisis.
But do you really think?
So here's the kind of analogy that I use, I ask my students how many of them exercise daily, and they say, "Well, I can't live without it." And what you're doing when you're exercising is you're actually creating instability. You're stressing your body, right? And I think that's exactly what needs to be done now, are these sort of controlled stresses, these controlled instabilities that allow us to learn. Hopefully, they would be things that are safe to fail. You know, if we make a mistake, so what? I think part of that other sort of neoliberal trap that you were talking about has become this emphasis on success, that we can't afford failures. And yet we need to develop a society that's much more forgiving, much more safe to fail. I mean, the funding environment that everyone was talking about in terms of that is trapped by that.
Yes.
You know, what am I getting for my money? Whereas foundations and a lot of these funders said, this is go do good things sort of attitude. You know, and just the fact of giving is the process, not a sort of corporate mentality of what products am I going to get? Can I measure these sorts of things?
I'm almost, you know, I was just thinking of a new term. Maybe it's not a new term. We should Google this, but it's hedge funding.
Yeah, it's
hedge funding to get quick returns. The things we're doing here, it's really planting seeds of change.
Absolutely.
And it's creating environments in which these seeds can blossom, and that takes time. And oftentimes, it takes too much time for the funders in order to be able to see their results. They want to have quick results and measurable outcomes. And many of the things that we are talking about, social cohesion, utilizing diversity, bridging and bonding between different cultures, different perspectives. These are the kinds of outcomes that are crucial for a more sustainable world, but they're not so you cannot measure them very well. And sometimes you can do better in making visible that this is happening and showing that there might be some way of showing that this is happening, and I'm sure there are innovative ways of monitoring and evaluation that we're not really using very well at the moment. But we need to get better at that too, making visible these softer outcomes, making them a little harder, if you will, so that they become more...
I want to push back on some of this because I think civic ecology, there's almost a so what aspect to it. You know, I don't know if we can reconnect the disconnect between man and nature that has developed. I think that that's a chasm right now. Everybody's growing up in an indoor, electronic, sedentary world, more and more so every day. And so there's a part of me that wonders, we have been having Earth Day in this country for 40 years. And the purpose of Earth Day was stewardship development. And I'm sorry, if after 40 years, this is the result of our attempt at stewardship, I really believe we've failed. I don't think environmental programs and civic ecology programs have failed. But I think collectively we have. And so I push back on civic ecology, and that's why I am really promoting this split-screen perspective, because we're losing the forest through the trees.
Mm. Of course, we will never know where we would be today if we had not had 40 years of Earth Day. We may be a lot worse off, actually. But you're right. I mean, the decline is going quite rapidly, and the time... The window of
and
opportunity.
The developing
is
world is becoming that way too.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think the learning. I want to go back to that. I think we recently had a meeting in South Africa talking about transformative learning, transformation, transitions, and some people introduced this notion of what they called 4T learning, transformative, and that we need to think about who we are, what kind of things we find important in life, kind of values we support, what kind of values we maybe weaken, willingly or unwillingly, reflecting on how to make change, agency, empowerment, all those things have to do with transformation, mm-hmm. transboundary, that boundary crossing we talked about earlier between different vantage points, sectors, link, making unlikely partnerships that create creativity. We have Sissink here, and we have Mira Lynch when you leave the door here. And I, you know, wonder how do they do something together? That could be interesting. Maybe they do, but maybe they don't. They're together, but they're not really interacting. Mm-hmm. So transboundary learning, and then transdisciplinary learning. I think in academia, there's more and more interest in transdisciplinary work. More and more journals that are focusing on transdisciplinary research. So that's growing. And finally, I think transgressive learning. And transgression means that we can sometimes upset mm-hmm. existing norms and question hegemonic behavior.
Must.
And we must disrupt. And I think learning is always a result of some form of dissonance. We know this
Absolutely.
From educational theory. But to disrupt and to maybe go in people's just outside of people's comfort zones. To kind of move things. You know, we're on that train heading towards that ravine, and there are some people on the train walking in the other direction, but they're not really challenging the direction of the train.
So we need to push
the
buttons,
think,
yeah.
Do we need to maybe derail the train, or do we need to change the course of the train? If we don't do that, then you know, we may be doing good work on the surface, but we're not really getting to the roots, and I get back to that. We need to also address the root causes.
I agree with that 100%, in that I would say it slightly different. We need to move out of a learning before doing model to a learning while doing model.
Beautiful.
Where our actions actually inform our learning as much as achieving some other set of objectives.
Well, we would like you to be a funder so we can do that.
I'm sorry, my wallet's just not that big, okay? But the other thing I was going to say on that, one of the other characteristics to me of the sort of dominant mindset is I think we have lost our willingness to question deep assumptions. And part of learning requires that revealing our assumptions, revealing those underlying beliefs that then lay the foundation for the learning-based action.
Can you give an example?
I don't think we can talk about race in the South. It's just not done.
Don't go there.
I don't think. Part of the sort of large rift in climate change disjunct between research and action, I think, is because part of power is defining an agenda of what people talk about. And so
controlling the agenda.
Power is expressing what gets talked about.
Correct.
So that I think that by constraining what gets talked about is not only an exertion of power, it's a constraint on learning. Because you have to be able to express these alternative ideas and concepts and reveal these deep assumptions.
A more open willingness to put it all on the table.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that takes
leadership.
But not only does it take leadership, it takes bravery.
Yeah.
And it takes support. And I think one of the consequences of this sort of weird paradoxical development towards the individual sitting behind their computer, you know, and thinking that they're socially connected through Facebook, is that they don't have that support to really question. Some people don't want to do it anyway,
mm-hmm.
but some people do. I mean, this is where the learners and leaders, I think, are the capacity to question those assumptions and to propose them.
Yeah.
But there's one big assumption in our culture. Is of course that competition is good, that you need to grow and develop all the time. If even personal growth, you could argue, is there a moment in our development where we can just be? and just be happy with who we are and what we are? Or should we always develop and grow in order to not fall behind? This kind of thinking is very much ingrained.
Totally.
Just like that we that we need to accumulate things and have new things all the time. That's also kind of implanted almost in our genes. We are, you know Juliet Shore's book Born By, in which she really describes this in a very vivid way, how young children age of 3 can already distinguish over 200 brands in certain parts of the world, which is remarkable. So the assumption that by collecting and accumulating goods and material things that is healthy, that we should buy in order to be good citizens, that we are framed as consumers, consumer confidence, consumer this, consumer that, and not as human beings anymore. If we use the language that is the language of, say the language of business, which I don't want to diminish everything to do with the economy or with the business. I mean, a lot of innovation and good ideas come from that way of thinking. But to believe that that's the only way we can survive, I think, is an assumption that we should start questioning.
Well, do we need to get this level of discussion at the highest level of politics and business so that the risk takers among us are seeing the need to do a little bit more of what you were saying?
I would argue more at the business community than
the political.
In my mind, politicians are not leaders. They're followers.
But they create policy that feed business incentives and such.
Absolutely. But I don't know. I'm so jaded about it.
There's no marriage.
It's not just leadership at a specific scale of governance, but recognizing that there are leaders in other aspects of our lives.
And maybe we are a little bit simplifying now. By making distinctions between the world of business and the public-private dichotomies.
Yes.
I think part of this new way of doing things is this hybrid, this notion of hybridity, creating vital coalitions of multiple stakeholders. I mean, people working for companies, they're also private citizens, and they have children who go to schools. And there are all these connections, but we tend to frame people and box people in certain categories that may actually not be very helpful. And I think there are a lot of businesses who are part of a community and they do want to contribute to the well-being of their workers and the well-being of the community in which they are part. But there are also a lot of businesses that have kind of a slash and burn approach. If they can put the factory somewhere else and where there are less strict environmental laws or where the labor laws are, there are no labor laws at all, or where they can fire people easily, more easily, then they'll just move to another place and they don't have any connection with the place or the people or the cultures of which they are part, and they as a result, they become kind of ghost companies that are not really part of sustainable.
But so my question is, can we get these people to voluntarily do more of this and bring others along, or do we need public policy? I mean, there is a paternalism factor with the widening gap of poor people in this country that are depending on government to take care of crises. And you know FEMA has to bail out everybody after every crisis. And at what point are we going to say we need policies in place that lead business in the right direction to address some of these issues?
I think policies is part of the certainly part of the equation, but I think the shift from government to governance is an interesting
absolutely
one, where the government is less a body that writes policies, but is becoming more a body that participates in governance with other stakeholders, where they create spaces where people can interact and where they can create their own kind of rules of engagement, their
own
values.
But the laws of the land in this country favor. The businesses control the laws of this land right now. They have pretty much bought the ability for electoral successes, and therein lies the profit margin that they're all seeking. And we talk about welfare and handouts, but we never talk about corporate welfare and corporate handouts. And that's just feeding their profit margins. So I think they're intrinsically woven, and more so today than ever before, I'd love them to separate out and have government become governance, but I think we're in a pickle right here, and not so easy.
Yeah, so I have a very a different view on that. I think you're absolutely right in everything you said. But also, it's not that inevitably systems go through these periods of crisis and collapse. I'm a systems ecologist, and we see system after system after system. And so this idea of resilience is really how the system responds, transforms after these events or can of it. And so my sense is that this sort of very powerful controlling system that's in place right now is going to suffer from those. There's going to be some kind of collapse. There's going to be some kind of crisis in the future. And to me, as we started out with, these crises open opportunity.
Right.
And so I think what then the wanting to be an agent of change, then how do you take advantage of that crisis to begin these other experiments? Because in some of the work I've done, after those crises, it's too quick to really analyze and think.
Yeah.
Right? Where do we go? What do we do? Well, let's just put it back the way that it is. So the systems are on reinforcing, pathologic electrical systems. Our electricity goes out every time it rains or the wind blows because we have them up on poles. Well, let's think about putting them underground and that kind of stuff. So what would enable those kinds of transformations to occur? And I think what enables them are demonstrations of experiments or pilot programs where people have tried these other things before. Oh, well, and so what happens at this crisis, although there are times when there is a kind of what I say are de novo solutions. That is, let's get together and figure out a way of dealing with this, changing, transforming the system that's going to address these issues from the past as well as the future. But other ones come from little bits and pieces of knowledge that have been thought about, proffered before by usually scientists or groups like this one at CSYNC, where you think about those sorts of things.
Yeah.
This is the sort of Shell Oil planning scenario model of business about how resilient they've been because of this capacity to think about and envision a wide range of alternatives, not one path, but a wide range of paths. What are the mechanisms and characteristics that would guide down each one of those paths? And moreover, how would you know?
Right.
Yeah, just to pick up on, I really think it's important because these issues that we're facing are so overwhelming, and people might easily say, well, it's too much, and then there's disagreement sometimes among scientists even, and they might easily use that as an excuse even not to change whatever they're doing, as long as they don't have it. Have figured it out. I'm not going to do anything, which is dangerous because the issues are too urgent for that. But I do think that it's very important that we kind of nurture and support these practices of hope and possibility that
Absolutely.
Are everywhere to counter that sentiment of it's so big and we can't do anything, because there are a lot of things happening. And I think what happens, to go back to your policy question, I think when there are practices that lead to a sense of community, cultural sensitivity, ecological mindfulness, social well-being, all these things, and there are examples of that, that policy kind of follows practice, because then the policymakers and the people in government, they want to be associated with those practices, and they will create nurturing policies that will allow for those kinds of practices to duplicate and become stronger.
And I'm your host, David Maddox of New York City, founder and editor of thenatureofcities.com. You've been listening to This is the Nature of Cities podcast, produced by The Nature of Cities, music by David Maddox. We'll be right back. Copyright 2015, The Nature of Cities, all rights reserved. For more information about this or other Nature of Cities productions or publications, see thenatureofcities.com.